Welcome back. You're watching StockWatch with me, Bright Khumalo. Tackling your stock-related questions this evening are Graham Kerner from Kerner Perspective and Alex Days from Umthombo Wealth. Send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag StockWatch. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. I'll start with you, Graham. Can you give us a market wrap for our local markets? I mean, I don't know, it's our fourth day in the red. I don't know how to feel anymore. I don't even have a stomach anymore.
Yeah, good evening, Brighton. Happy birthday. Yeah, I think the market's doing what world markets are doing at the moment. You know, down 1.1 earlier in the day.
Yeah.
It looked as though we were going to sort of shrug off some of that global weakness following what was really an awful night in the U.S., but it wasn't to be. I think later in the day you saw progressively, I think as the day dragged on, you know, some of the miners, for example, giving back. Obviously, I think they seem to be almost proxies for the global growth story. Yeah, but pretty much across the board, quite a lot of red. Banks were, I think, the standout winners. And then maybe some of the local economy stocks, maybe a couple of the mid caps, and also some of those that have been sort of marked down quite heavily in the week or so that led up to today, I think bouncing. But it was an awful day. Telecoms and resources, I think, leading the downside. But I think on all things considered, we probably gave back quite a bit of what the US was going to experience or what did experience. So it wasn't a bloodbath that we might have expected, but it's really difficult, Bright. I think the markets generally are very, very volatile. People are scared. They pretty much don't know what to pin their hopes on. You know, is the Fed going to do the unthinkable and do 75 bips or maybe even more? So there's really a lot of fear and confusion around. And, you know, for the brave, I'd say these are wonderful markets. But, yeah, you really got to be strapped into this roller coaster really tight.
Yeah, no, you make some valid comments there. I mean, we want to come back to that point you made earlier about, you know, PGMs and mining companies in general. We've got a question here about that. Alex, in the US, I mean, it's been a weird sort of 3 days of trading of, you know, 9% in the red, you know, on the S&P 500. Before we opened today, I see we're in the red now about 0.5%, but before we opened, you know, we were up. It was, everything seemed to be coming down, but I see we're back again. It's not looking good, to say the least. But what do you make of these global markets now, particularly?
Yeah, I mean, so first of all, so obviously we've got the Fed announcement's going to happen tomorrow. So
yep.
The difference between, let's call it this week and perhaps a couple of weeks ago, is when the market was penciling a 50 basis point increase in interest rates, now, as Graham is referring to, 75 bips, even more, is spent in. So as a result, that has spooked the market. And remember, the concern is if interest rates go up too quickly, it could, of course, mean that we can enter into a recession or so-called hard landing. And that will be catastrophic for the markets, because not only will you see a derating in the P multiples, but also the earnings in the recession will come down. So that means downside in the market theoretically could be a lot more than we've really experienced so far. So obviously, what we're trying to prevent is a recession, and hopefully the companies can continue to generate returns. But at this moment, investors are unsure about it, and as a result, we're seeing this heightened volatility.
Yeah, if you have time tomorrow, you should come speak to my clients, because, I mean, trying to explain why we're down, the S&P 500 is down 22% on basically, you know, a little bit of hopscotching around inflation and rates doesn't make a lot of sense, you know, for the man on the street. But hopefully we can do some justice to it here. Graham, let's talk about some of the results presentation. Results announcement we saw today. I mean, Russell also is asking us a question about it. Say, Telkom was down about 8%, is a bit of a head scratcher. But I mean, we saw those revenues numbers down about 1.1%. I thought, you know, telecoms were a sure thing. What's happening?
Yeah, Bright, I think we spoke a few days ago about the telecom sector, and I think the big thing here is the sector needs to find new revenue streams and new profit streams. You know, so for telecom, of course, it was copper, then it became fiber, and they still have a lot of fiber and Obviously, more recently have moved into mobile, but it's difficult for we've seen what happened to Cell C. It's very difficult to compete with MTN and Vodacom when they had that incredible, almost runway of where there was no competition. But the market is brutal at the moment. I think if you look at telecom, revenue slightly down, as you say, earnings basically flat. The market's saying, where are you going? What are you going to do that's different? And buying, voice integrators, for example, in the tech space is not really good enough. I think if you look at MTN and Vodacom with M-Pesa, everybody I think agrees that voice revenues and data revenues are probably going to fall. There's going to be an explosion of data, but the prices are going to fall fast. And you've got people like Rain trying to upset the apple cart. And as we discussed last week, a lot of players in the market looking, including cities, trying to offer, citizenry free broadband. So I think data prices are going to fall. The guys are looking to financial services. And I think the general view is, although telecom has got, properties and it's got, copper and it's got, last mile and all those things, the reality is, it's just not able to capitalize on that. And that's why the share was down almost 10%. I mean, if you look at it, it's back at where it was early 2021. MTN has, well more than doubled. And I think it's a business model story. And I suppose in a way, telecom was held back by government in many ways, having been kind of the parastatal and wasn't able to compete and prepare itself for this new future.
So you're saying that caused them to shoot themselves in the foot, basically. Interesting observation. Your thoughts on telecom, Alex, do you have anything to add?
Yes, so as Graeme alluded to, so telecom needs to change the revenue mix, and that of course means lots of CapEx needs to be spent and business we built, which we have done over a number of years and continue to do, but we haven't seen the returns of that just yet. And if you look at the latest set of results, also had a massive negative free cash flow number of over 2 billion. And that's a worrying number, and unlikely to reverse materially going forward. Specifically about the guidance of management was a lot more positive 6 to 12 months ago than the number we saw today. And that just really means that telecom can't really afford to reintroduce a dividend at some stage, and that's also affecting negativity and sentiment towards the business. So I think still a lot of hard work ahead of telecom. Most likely going to have hit more speed bumps before things are going to get better. And as a result, I think the share price movement is justified.
Yeah, no. And like you're saying, I mean, there was a lot of talk of, selling off some of those buildings and or maybe creating a REIT, separating it into a separate business or getting it ready to be bought by another REIT. But then COVID happened, and I don't know if those plans happened or are happening or they're still pending. There's a lot going on at Telkom, unfortunately. And nothing seems to be going their way, to say the least. Let's talk about Sibanye-Stillwater for a minute. I mean, they signed a 3-year wage agreement, and as the viewer is saying here, they were celebrating. But now, one of the major plant in the US is flooded. What does this mean for the company in the interim, Graham?
Well, I think, Bright, we need to see it in context. The platinum stocks, as we were talking in the introduction, it was a difficult day for resources generally. Just to give context there, if I may, Amplats itself down 3.25%. So Sibanye-Stillwater, of course, the flooding of a mine in North America is not good news. And I mean, really, you sort of feel that they just can't catch a break at the moment. But I think there's also just you've seen it, Bright, in the automakers, for example. You look at a company like Volkswagen, there's definitely an anxiety about demand. The metal price, I think platinum was down about 1% today. So I think there's just a lot of anxiety generally around the medium-term demand for certain metals. And I think the PGMs are probably maybe a little bit more vulnerable, because I think in many ways they seem to be, I wouldn't call them the discretionary commodities, but clearly auto cats go into vehicles, and those are more luxury oriented than maybe be copper or iron ore. So I think, yeah, but what I'm saying is, you know, Sabania down 5% and a bit on the day, on a 3-month view down 34%. But it's not, today it wasn't really out of line with what was happening in the precious metal cluster.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen the past 2 days, basically Glencore is down more than 5% yesterday, is down further today, but not by much. But it's a story of just, you know, mining in general cooling off a bit here. Do you have any comments on the Sibanye situation? I mean, I think there it's a story of, you know, change in season. Snow is melting, and then they're having too much rainfall, and that's what's causing the floods. Alex.
Yes, unfortunately, the Stillwater acquisition hasn't really worked out as originally planned so far. First of all, from a production perspective, they haven't really hit the targets they wanted there, and there's been a few cost overruns and development as well. Now we're seeing this type of natural disasters, but of course, nothing you can do about that. But so far, Stillwater has definitely disappointed from an operational perspective. And overall, I think SM Mining, if you look year to date, the Rand is give or take. You know, hasn't really particularly moved that much, but input cost pressures have increased substantially for the mining companies.
Yeah.
And at the same time, productions have gone down. So you're going to see a lot less profitability from the mines than we saw the prior 12 months and so forth. So you really need to see a weakening rand or much higher commodity prices to offset that. So unfortunately, that's why Sibanye share price is down excess of 30% over the last 3 months. But of course, can quickly reverse again if things do fall in their favor. But at the moment, things are against him.
Ah, what a sad story. I would have liked to see those, you know, those gains, you know, sort of stay up for longer, you know, for the success of South Africa in general. We've got a question here from Parate Squeb, who says, good day, I'd like to ask your panel about the size of the Fed hike. Will there be or is there a difference in market reaction between, you know, the difference between a 75 basis point hike and a 50 basis point hike? This is a very technical economic question there for you, Alex.
Yeah, certainly there will be a different reaction. So if you look at currently what's being priced into the market from a floor rate, etc., and so forth, it's about 50 basis points.
Yeah.
So if we do get 75 basis points, it will certainly spook the market and also give indication that the Fed is perhaps more concerned than they're currently giving guidance for. As a result, it's going to raise interest rates with a quicker temper. And remember when I said earlier, if interest rates go up too quickly, it could slow down economic activity to such an extent that you could enter a U.S. recession,
yeah,
or potentially global recession.
Wow.
And that would mean that asset class prices will continue to fall. So it's a balancing act. I think, you know, who knows exactly what's going to happen, but I think at the moment the probability is probably higher for 50 basis points. And then the market's going to look very closely what the outlook statement is going to be for July and September going forward. But certainly there is going to be a different reaction.
Yeah.
If it's between 50 or 70 or even 100 basis points, I mean, then you can only imagine what the impact would be.
Okay, fantastic. That makes sense because you care about what's priced in, but anything outside of that, you should start worrying. We've got a question here, Graham. It's about the banking sector, basically, you know, like you were saying earlier, it's been keeping us up. And the viewer at home is asking whether they should be, you know, still hold these in their portfolio, or they should sell and maybe look for opportunities elsewhere.
Well, I think the first question is, you know, what is the outlook for the banks? And I would say a steadily orderly increase in interest rates is in the interest of the banks, because the margins will improve. You know, so generally, I think a higher interest rate environment will be good as long as it's not chaotic. And I think that's what Alex was saying earlier. Would I sell them? You know, the question is, why would you sell Absa on a 7 PE with a 5% dividend yield to go and buy, you know, who knows what? So, you know, if you're thinking, well, you want to take a roll of the dice and you'd like to play some high beta, you know, growth counters that have come off maybe globally, then yeah, that might make sense, but then you probably were in the wrong stocks anyway. But I think the fact that the, you know, we just take Absa as an example, yeah, it's obviously given back a little bit in the last while. But you know, it it's only down 7.5% over 3 months, and you've seen, you know, some really catastrophic losses on the on a couple of the bigger caps, and particularly those that are more geared to global growth. So the short answer is no, I wouldn't sell Absa or Standard Bank or First Rand or Nedbank or even Investec at these levels to go and, you know, take a spin on the roulette wheel. I think they're looking good, and the outlook for them in a steadily rising interest rate environment is probably improving. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why they've actually, in the last day or two, held up relatively well.
Yeah. Do you have any varying view, Alex, on banking and just your overall thoughts on someone holding banking and whether they should be selling or not?
I agree with Graham. I said this. I think the big four banks in SA looks quite attractive for the moment.
Yeah.
So the valuation certainly isn't expensive. They're looking actually quite attractive. We know we're going to get incremental growth, and we're going to get a bit of high interest rates. Unlikely that bad debts is going to pick up materially. And as a result, you could expect some decent returns, total returns from the banks. So for us, we're very comfortable holding on to it. I think also in the insurance space, we've seen quite a sell-off there. You know, high-quality counter like a Sanlam now is below 60 Rand. I think that's probably not a bad entry level if you also want a high-quality insurance business. But certainly, I think there is some opportunities in the banking space. I would say still Capitec for me is probably still too expensive. So I would prefer the traditional big four banks or even an Investec, which still looks attractive to us, even though it's rallied tremendously hard over the last couple of years.
Oh, okay, so I like that. We're bullish on banking on this show, which is perfect, right? We've got a question here from the SMS line, which says, Thungela announced a trading update that looked excellent, but the price dropped a lot in the past 2 days. What is the reason for this? I think we sort of touched on the reason, but do you want to talk about Thungela as an investment particularly or specifically, Graham?
Right. I think we spoke about it a few weeks ago, and I'll sort of, at the risk of boring, repeat what I said at the time, that, I mean, obviously Thungela has had the
look
wind
at that
at their
share
backs.
Price. I mean, 806% since listing. You've been rewarded if you've been holding since the unbundling. Well done to you.
Yeah, although you inherited such a minuscule position from Anglos, it sort of made their dirty fossil fuel problem my dirty fossil fuel problem. And you had 100K in Anglos, you've got, you know, 1,000 rands worth of shares. You couldn't sell them cost effectively, so thanks for that. But I think, you know, the issue is that it comes back to what we were talking about, you know, questionable outlook. But the reality is South Africa needs coal, there's no doubt about it, and economies like India and probably China need coal as well. But the rest of the world really is applying the screws, and you've seen, you know, Europe and the UK offering South Africa incentives to sort of wean itself off coal. So I think the long-term prognosis is not good. Commodity prices have actually, even in spite of the weakness we've seen in markets, it's not like commodity prices have imploded. So I would say that the short-term outlook is probably reasonably good, but I don't think you want to be invested in Thungela 2 or 3 years from now. I think, you know, the screws are going to tighten on coal generally. So, but you've already seen that share price give back quite a bit. And my sense is, because we don't have a history of the business as a standalone, it's very difficult to get your arms around it and to sort of say, well, you know, at these levels, should you maybe just, you know, be a little bit philosophical and say, well, South Africa still needs coal, and, you know, some of the export markets will still need good quality coal, and they, the sell-off is overdone. So it's a difficult one. I think what I'm saying is, on the short term, maybe like some of the commodity stocks, the sell-off is a little overdone.
Yep.
But I think longer term, you don't want to be in this one.
Okay. Let's talk about that time horizon that we didn't really cover much about Thungela, Alex, which is 3 to 5 years. I mean, there's been a perfect storm, you know, in Western Europe with the, you know, Russia-Ukraine war. And now the West wants to, especially Western Europe, wants to be independent of Russia's oil and gas, meaning there's obviously no quick solution for them. Now they're forced to dabble here and there in these quote-unquote dirty fossil fuels, right, including coal. There's been a big surge in that demand there, which bodes well for these companies if they can get the coal outside of the country when and when and as it's needed. The question is, do you see that basically topping off anytime soon and leveling out, you know, in less than 3 years? Or is that a story of, call it 5 to 6 years? Because, I mean, if I'm a long-term investor, it's very, very hard to call the short-term. But, I mean, if I start looking at medium-term to long-term, these things should start making sense. I mean, also what I'm, I guess the question I'm going to is, an outlook not just on the coal companies themselves, but the price of the commodity itself as well.
Look, I think first, there was a lot of talk from politicians looking to pressure to say we need to move as quickly as possible to renewables and reduce carbon emissions and so forth. I think the reality is it can't happen as quick as a lot of people want it to happen. And one of that is going to be the uses of coal. We are, the world's going to require coal for still a number of years going forward. And it's the same with the shift from auto combustion engines to battery car engines. It's not going to happen as quickly as people think. It's, we simply can't do it as quickly.
Yeah.
So in demand will remain for PGMs, and then the same for coal. And the same problem with coal also is the banks, and no one wants to put new equity funding into coal mines. And yet at the same time, demand is probably going to be a little bit more resilient than people anticipate. With the no new supply coming on stream, probably means coal prices are going to be more resilient than people believe at this moment. So, and if that is the case, then there is still a case to be made for businesses like Thungela and Exxaro, even though ESG investors and so forth won't touch it, and there's going to be more and more pressure on these companies and investors to buy it. But I think these companies will probably continue to do well for a bit longer than people anticipate. How long is difficult to say, but I would say if I have to be a betting man over the next 3 to 5 years, I think coal is going to be still relatively resilient. Probably do better than most people think it will do. The same with PGMs and battery vehicles.
Look, these, you know, sort of coal companies, especially the two we're talking about right now, which is Exxaro and Thungela, already have gone through, you know, the capital deployment J curve. It's not like a new coal startup that's, you know, trying to, you know, get off the ground. This is a story of existing companies that have shown and they're doing well and already there. But yeah, in terms of financing, the newer guys are going to suffer if there's anyone who's got aspirations of, you know, starting a coal company. But the guys that are there, I think they're going to sort of enjoy the market to themselves. Obviously, the market is going to be finite, like we all agree here. With that said, gentlemen, I like those answers, but it's the moment of truth now, Graham. Your stock pick for the evening?
I'm going to go with the Foschini Group, TFG.
Why? Actually, a question just came now for the Foschini Group from Rob. So you're sort of killing two birds with one stone. You have a minute.
Yes, I think the one thing I like, you know, we're always looking for companies that have got some, the only word I can think of is mojo. You know, they've got a little bit of, you know, here's a little bit of energy. They're trying to do different things. And to me, Foschini Group has done that. You know, if you look at how they've built their portfolio in a very, very difficult environment, building these new silos, building these new brands, you know, embracing the digital revolution, you know, taking the crown jewel out of Edgar's, I believe, you know, what was it, 400 odd stores, out of, you know, Jet stores. It just feels to me as though a business that's doing a lot of really good stuff, obviously trying to, you know, bring some manufacturing jobs in the clothing sector back to South Africa.
Yes.
But you're looking at a business that I think will probably give you around 10-11% earnings growth over the next couple of years, dividend yield approaching 4%, you know, the PEG ratio around 1. It to me, it ticks all the boxes. But most importantly, I think it's prudently managed, but it's progressive.
Okay. I like that. Prudently managed and progressive. The reason why I've always liked the Foschini Group personally is the buyers. They always get it right, at least for me. Alex, your stock pick for the evening?
Yeah, so probably for the first time ever on a show, but I'm going to go for MTN today.
Why?
I think the stock was down about 18% or so the last month. Probably ran a little bit ahead of itself. So I do think it's not a bad entry point at this particular moment.
Okay.
If you look at the balance sheet, it's getting stronger. I mean, we can expect continued deleveraging on the whole co level. Organic growth potential in overall MTN still looking relatively good, and it's still got some value unlock opportunities with the fintech business and so forth going forward. So I think there's quite a few things that's in their favor. There's always risk of MTN, as you know, Nigeria, and extracting capital out of those markets and regulatory risks and so forth. But I think that's in the price at the moment. And for those that are willing to hold MTN for the next 3 or so years, I think this is a good entry point.
Okay, thank you very much, Alex. So Alex is picking MTN and Graham is going with the Foschini Group. So fashion and telecoms. Thanks to my guest, Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective and Alex Days from Umthombo Wealth. Stockwatch is back again tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a good evening.